Arugula and asparagus, cabbage and kale, radishes and rhubarb, strawberries, all are showing up at the Urbana Farmers Market. Yet to come, basil, sweet corn, and heirloom tomatoes. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. This afternoon, we're celebrating the summer growing and cooking season with gardener and food writer Jeannie Kelly. Jeannie Kelly is the author of Blue Eggs and Yellow Tomatoes, Recipes from a Modern Kitchen Garden. Yellow tomatoes can be found today at the supermarket, but blue eggs? Have you seen blue eggs? The shells are blue. They are beautiful. I remember my surprise at opening a carton of eggs from an area farm. It was just last summer. We'll hear about blue eggs and other delights in this portion of the program. Jeannie Kelly's book, Blue Eggs and Yellow Tomatoes, includes 150 recipes that make use of the foods that come from our gardens and local growers at farmers markets. There are recipes for small plates, soups, salads, pizza, pasta, fish, poultry, meat, veggies, side dishes, and sweets. There's also information on gardening and keeping chickens. Listeners, join us this afternoon with a phone call. We look forward to your questions and comments. Perhaps you have a gardening story or a recipe you'd like to share with us. Here are the phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Jeannie Kelly attended La Varenne École de Cuisine in Paris. She has been a contributing editor at Bon Appetit magazine since 1999. She's also a frequent contributor to Cooking Light magazine and several other publications. You'll find her on the web at www.JeannieKellyKitchen.com. And her name, Jeannie, is spelled with two N's and an E, and then Kelly is spelled K-E-L-L-E-Y, JeannieKellyKitchen.com. Blue Eggs and Yellow Tomatoes is published by The Running Press. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Jeannie Kelly, good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm fine, Celeste. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Well, tell us about these blue eggs and the chickens that lay them.
Well, I have Araucana chickens. I also have some barred Plymouth Rock and some Australorp chickens. But the Araucana chickens are a South American chicken, and they lay the beautiful pale blue eggs.
When was your first introduction to blue eggs? I mentioned in the introduction that my introduction to blue eggs was just last summer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was just a surprise to
yeah.
you. That's great. Well, I remember reading about them, I think, in a very, very old issue of Martha Stewart. And she was the first person to champion the blue eggs. And I remember she had a paint. I think it was called Araucana or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, aside from being just that beautiful blue, it's a great chicken. It lays a lot of eggs. And it's also a hen that can take the heat. It can stand up to a little cold. So it's just a very good chicken to raise if you want to raise backyard chickens.
Yeah. How many chickens do you have?
I have seven now.
Seven hens?
Yes.
And you let them roam in the garden once they're able, once they're grown
up? You know,
up.
I used to let them roam in the garden, but now I have them in a yard. I have a pet pygmy goat, and so they have a very nice area underneath the oak trees, and so they're penned in because I have a neighborhood that has dogs, and I have dogs, and there's coyotes, and there are raccoons, and so there's just too many predators to let them out on their own.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was funny that reading Blue Eggs and Yellow Tomatoes in the section where you include the information about the chickens is that they like the things that we like. They like tomatoes, and so you have to keep an eye on them in that regard.
Exactly. I used to let them roam free, and then I'd find that, you know, they would just have gone and eaten like a perfectly ripe, beautiful tomato.
And also they would go and lay eggs where you couldn't see them, and you'd find yourself on a egg hunt.
Yes, I remember just finally seeing a chicken emerge from a bush and looking in there and seeing about, you know, 20 eggs. I was like, oh, my goodness, no wonder I hadn't been getting very many from the nest where they were supposed to lay.
Yeah, so they can still roam, but not as far.
Not as far, no.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, gardener and food writer Jeannie Kelly, author of Blue Eggs and Yellow Tomatoes. We already have a listener who is joining us, so let's go to this call. A listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I have a question. I'm in my 40s, and I've been interested in gardening and farming and all of those things forever. I mean, since I was a little kid. And maybe because of spending lots of time on my uncle's farms, I don't know. And I've been going to farmers markets since I was in my 20s. And I guess what I'm wondering is, what do you think is responsible for the fact that in the last, say, 2 to 5 years, there's this, been this huge interest and huge surge in people wanting to go to farmers markets and wanting to buy more natural and organic foods? Why all of a sudden... What has caused this shift from 10 years ago where, you know, it wasn't that popular? Now it's extremely popular all over the country.
Well, I know where I live in Southern California, farmers markets have been very huge, very popular for a long time. And I think it has a lot to do with people wanting to eat more locally, people all of a sudden becoming more aware of, you know, what it does to the environment to have vegetables and fruits shipped in from South America.
Why do you think they're more aware? Is it the media that's all of a sudden brought it to us? Because, I mean, I've been aware of these things for years, and so I'm trying to understand what has made the public all of a sudden more aware.
Perhaps the media could play a part in it, and maybe it's just people like you who are gaining a voice. I mean, when you're doing something that's good and that's good for people's health and that's good for the environment and that also creates for delicious food, you want to get the word out there. And so if you're getting the word out there by word of mouth and other people happen to be writing about it, I mean, I think it's a great thing that all of a sudden people are tuning into this idea of eating fresh and eating locally and cultivating your own fruits and vegetables.
Uh-huh. I just find it's very fascinating to observe, because I know when I went to Europe for the first time in my 20s, I just found the markets there fascinating and the way people eat and things like that. And I just wished that could be more present here, and it finally seems to be happening. More outdoor eating venues, more fresh local produce, those kinds of things. So, anyway, thank you.
You're so right.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I think that, I think we've seen more and more people take up gardening as a hobby, and I think that then spurs you on to take what you're growing in the backyard or in pots or whatever and move into the kitchen and enjoy the fruits of your labor.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, with food costs getting so high, it just makes it just, it just motivates you to want to grow things. And I think also there could be a tie-in with, you know, recipes being out there that maybe call for certain vegetables that you can't get at the market, but that you actually can grow very easily. So I think that has something to do with it, too, just all of a sudden just different things becoming popular. Like maybe 10 years ago, something like arugula wasn't that popular, whereas now, you know, you can't open a magazine or a newspaper and find a recipe in the summertime that doesn't call for it. And when people realize that it's practically like growing a weed, why pay, you know, $4 for some tiny scraggly bunch at a high-end supermarket when you can grow the stuff and have it just be perfect?
Yeah. I think also there's been a renewed interest in homekeeping and cooking. Would you agree?
I definitely agree with that. I think that just the whole idea of people planting gardens, I mean, our homes have become such an integral part, I mean, of our lives. I mean, it's where it's where it happens, so to speak, and I think people are spending more time at home and trying to Maybe it's an antidote to this kind of crazy, over-technical, you know, technological culture that we live in, where we want to do something like getting back to the earth and doing something as simple as planting a garden really mm-hmm. helps you make that connection.
Yeah, I think we're into a feathering our nest kind of period
yes.
here. And I think for a while, maybe we weren't too interested in that, and I think it's back big time.
Yeah, and I think that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. Back to your hens and the eggs that they lay, do you find a difference in the quality of the eggs from your hens as opposed to the eggs we find at the supermarket?
Oh, there's a huge difference between supermarket eggs and backyard eggs. It just has a lot to do with freshness. I've read where supermarket eggs can be anywhere from, you know, a month to even 2 months old, and that sometimes they do that process where they just keep things so cold that it, you know, retards spoilage. So when you're eating an egg that, you know, was laid within the last couple of days, and they also have a diet that's different, you know, they can scratch around in the ground, they can eat bugs, they can, you know, and I feed my chickens so many scraps from cooking. You know, they love to eat the ends of Swiss chards. They go crazy, you know, to eat their one of their favorite foods are the little green strawberry tops, you know, and they eat so much of that. And I think their diet affects so much the flavor of what of how the eggs taste. For me, the eggs almost take on this herbal quality. And they've got these bright yellow yolks that stand up really tall. For me, there's no comparison. They're just delicious.
Yeah. Well, the eggs, when I can get them from this particular area producer, because the hens don't always lay, you know, it's chilly, they don't lay eggs.
Right.
But I've noticed that the shells are much sturdier and the yolks bigger. And I don't know where they're feeding them, but they're doing a good job.
Yeah. And what I find is just a complete lack of uniformity with my chicken eggs as far as shape is concerned. It's really quite interesting. There'll be some very, very oblong, you know, not what one would consider a classic egg shape at all. So sometimes if I'm baking and I'm developing a recipe, I have to make a point of weighing the egg just to make sure that I'm not going to throw a recipe off by having,
yeah.
you know, eggs that are too small.
Yeah, that reminds me, you know, these eggs that come in the carton when you open them up, they're of varying sizes too. That's
yeah.
correct. Yeah, it's really fun. Well, when did your interest in gardening and cooking begin?
Well, I've always been a cook, but I grew up in a suburb. I grew up in Pasadena. My parents were not green thumbs. I mean, we had like the suburban garden of a lawn in the front yard and a pool in the backyard. So I didn't grow up with that culture of growing or planting. Although my parents were very interested in cooking, I'm one of five kids. We all cooked. My mother was great. She never minded if we made a mess in the kitchen, you know, cooking, baking, doing whatever we wanted. I was an exchange student when I was 16, and I lived in the southwest of France. And I lived on a farm that grew white asparagus and what they call the maïs doux, which is our corn, our sweet corn, which is very rare in France because they feel like corn is for the animals. And so living there made a big impression upon me. And also, as the caller said earlier, you know, going to the markets and seeing all the beautiful fresh produce in a French open-air market really does have a way of making an impact, you know, when you're so used to going to, you know, a supermarket that has these bins of produce and then kind of seeing it in the open air. It just, I don't know, it's kind of as it should be. And then my husband designs and installs gardens. That's his that's his job. So it kind of came hand in hand with that. When we were living in our apartment, we always found a way to plant tomatoes and herbs in containers. We'd find little places to tuck things. And so we did a lot of container gardening, and then he used to do a lot of gardening in a vacant lot, and that was great. He had a mini farm. And so, you know, I think it just kind of came hand in hand, you know, with you know, with the cooking and then the gardening.
Mm. Jeannie Kelly is our guest this afternoon in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. She is the author of Blue Eggs and Yellow Tomatoes, Recipes from a Modern Kitchen Garden. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with the telephone call. Your questions and comments are invited. Perhaps you have a gardening story or recipe you'd like to share with us. The phone number's in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Well, tell us a little bit about your training at La Varenne.
Well, that was fun because I got to live in Paris and go to cooking school there. But I think for me, the biggest part of my training as a cook has been doing all the recipe testing that I've done. I started doing freelance recipe testing for Bon Appetit magazine in 1986. I was 23 years old. And it's just a wonderful way to learn different techniques because the job entails following a recipe as it's written, troubleshooting, and then also because you are testing recipes from, you know, chefs all over the world, excellent food writers from all over the world, you're getting to see different processes and different ways of doing things. And it just opens up this wonderful world of possibilities and also the entire approach of learning by doing and being exposed to so many different kinds of cuisine. So for me, you know, being a recipe tester for so many years, that's really where I felt like I learned so much about food and cooking. Going to cooking school was fun. It gave me the confidence to come home and get a job in a restaurant because I could say that I'd gone to culinary school. But as far as really learning the craft of cooking, I think it's just been the experience of just doing and cooking in a way that you might not think things would work and then seeing that they actually do work.
Mm.
So it is the recipe testing for me that really, I don't know.
That's very interesting because I think the approach that you take in this book, Blue Eggs and Yellow Tomatoes, is straightforward and relaxed. It's confident. You're comfortable in this world of food, and you have a sense for making beautiful plates.
Well, thank you.
maybe you would talk with us a little bit about that. I suppose this also comes not only from being a recipe tester, but also working for cooking magazines where photographs are important to present readers with what the dish should look like when we're finished.
Well, yes, and it's not only the readers. It's interesting. When I used to work on staff and you'd be testing recipes, it's a wonderful process that they do at magazines. It's very, they have people who are food people. They have people that work in the editorial departments, and they have people that work, I'm not sure all magazines are like this, but most are. And then they have people that work in the art department. So you don't just have food people tasting things because you need everybody's opinion. And so you needed not only to sell a dish to people who maybe knew exactly what the dish was supposed to taste like, look like, and everything, but you needed to sell it to people who had never, say, heard of, you know, I'm trying to think of something that might have been slightly esoteric. So presentation just became very important. You have somebody evaluating the dish, not just how it tastes, but how it looks. So I think that for me kind of became a big part of making sure things looked good because you wanted it to get, you know, the benefit. You know, you wanted everybody to see it and like it. I think food is beautiful, especially when you're cooking with fresh fruits and vegetables. You've got so much going for it, color-wise, and aesthetically. It just seems very simple to make things look good when you're dealing with, you know, beautiful ingredients.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons growing up that my brothers and I for the most part, ate our vegetables is because they came to the table very attractive. You know, they look good.
Yes.
I know that's the trick, maybe, to getting kids to eat their spinach. But
right. I mean, a canned green bean, I wouldn't want to eat that. So why would a child?
Yeah. Well, let's give the audience some sense of your approach to food. Maybe you'd share a recipe from the book with us.
Oh, sure. Well, I like to say that my approach, I think it's sort of streamlined in the sense that I try to make things as simple as possible. I don't ever want to add any unnecessary steps. I think I have enough experience cooking where I see where you can take a shortcut here and there. I'm really into good flavor and not muted flavors, but I don't think anything's overpowering. I like good fresh fruits and vegetables to show through. And here's a recipe. This recipe is orecchietti with tomatoes and garden herbs. And orecchietti, it means little ear in Italian. And they're those wonderful little pastas. And it's sort of shaped like a little shallow dish, like a little shallow bowl. And what I love about this dish is it's so simple. You know, some might think that you wouldn't even need a recipe for it, but I just think it's just a very delicious way to showcase cherry tomatoes. And I like to make this. I always plant a sun gold tomato on my back patio. And a sun gold tomato is a cherry tomato that's this very beautiful pale orange color, and it's just got a very sweet, you know, just a great summer tomato flavor. So in this dish, you just simply boil the orecchietti and you drain it, and then you're mixing it with halved cherry tomatoes, balsamic vinegar, extra virgin olive oil, a little bit of garlic, and then I use chopped herbs, and basically I just grab a little handful of everything that I have growing in the garden. I'll sometimes pick mint, basil, parsley, marjoram, oregano, just any mix of what inspires me, and you chop that up and you mix it, and then you use lots of coarsely grated Parmesan or Romano cheese. And you just toss that together, and you can eat it hot, or you can let it sit at room temperature, you know, and cool mm-hmm. to room temperature. And it's just a wonderful, simple summer dish.
So that's a great dish also for, you don't have to do much in front of the stove.
No, it's a good summertime dish.
It's a great summertime dish, and, oh, the tomatoes just are going to shine through.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you're pressed for time, boy, that's simple, isn't it?
Oh yes, it's a very fast, simple recipe, and that's one that's going to be great. And then cherry tomatoes are usually the first tomatoes that come into season, so it won't be too much longer.
We've got a ways to go before we see the tomatoes here. The tomatoes that are grown out in the sunshine and in the dirt.
Well, even here, you know, we can plant them, but you know, it's rare that you'll get a tomato before the 4th of July, so.
Yeah, okay, so. Well, I don't feel so bad now.
No.
I don't feel so impoverished. But when those tomatoes come out, that is, I'm in hog heaven.
Yes.
So what is coming up in your garden here in the first week of June?
Well, I still have some Swiss chard left from my spring planting, so I've been eating quite a bit of chard and enjoying that. I've already planted my tomatoes, and I have, a different variety of beans this year. I have some scarlet runner beans and some nice green, you know, I think they call these ones green wonder beans or something like that. And I have some squash and eggplant. And what else have I grown down there? Lots of basil, cucumbers. I love the lemon cucumbers. I have those growing. Do you know that? That
no.
one, they're small and round
Mm-mm.
and yellow.
No, I don't know that.
And I don't know if it's just because they're called lemon cucumbers or if it's, you know, what you associate it by looking at it. But to me, they have a slight citrusy taste to it. But it's a great little cucumber, and they grow very easily.
Oh, okay. So that's a good one to look for if you're a beginner.
Yes. Yes, the lemon cucumber.
What else do you recommend beginners plant?
Well, I think tomatoes are a good thing to plant for a beginner. I mean, that's how I started gardening, and I think it's just my love of tomatoes. But they're a very satisfying plant to grow because they just grow into this big leafy green mass, and then it's just kind of exciting how you see the first the green tomatoes and then to see them ripen. You'll find that there are so many people out there with a lot of expertise and they're so willing to share it. I think there's an enthusiasm for planting tomatoes that maybe doesn't quite exist with planting other plants. And so it's a great one because you'll have so many people offering you advice and tips and how to have a successful tomato garden.
Yeah. Maybe that's also part of the key to the success of the farmers markets, going back to our first caller this afternoon, is that when you go to the farmers market, people are talking about the plants and how they were grown and the varieties.
So true, and at our farmers market, I've noticed we always have like a nursery at the very end of the lot. So you can actually go around and you can buy your tomatoes, and then you can go buy a tomato plant.
Where they
have nice herbs and different things like that. So yeah, that's great. And also, you know, a community garden is a wonderful way to garden, you know, and basically almost have somebody hold your hand, because there's always here we have a program. There's it's called the Master Gardeners Program that I think it's through the community, but it's this wonderful way. It's like you always have somebody who knows something, that has some sort of expertise, and it's very helpful because not everybody is going to know, you know, how to. I mean, people don't even know what seasons to plant things in. I think we've gotten so far removed to the idea of seasonal cooking. You talk to most young people, and they don't realize that, you know, that there are summer vegetables and there are winter crops. And so I think with the community garden, it is a really good way to all of a sudden have people say, okay, well, you know, now is when we're going to plant.
Yeah, I heard a story at a gardening center where somebody came in and said, those seeds you sold me were no good. And what happened is that we had a very cool and wet May. And even in the middle of May, you wouldn't want to put your basil out. It was so cold, even at Mother's Day here. So, yeah, isn't that interesting? Well, everybody gets to learn, and sometimes the learning curve is a little steep, and sometimes it's not steep at all.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Jeannie Kelly is our guest this afternoon here on the program. She's the author of Blue Eggs and Yellow Tomatoes, Recipes from a Modern Kitchen Garden. You'll find our guest, Jeannie Kelly, on the World Wide Web at www.jeanniekellykitchen.com. And that recipe that she shared with us a little bit earlier is there on her website. Her name is spelled Jeannie with two N's and an E, J-E-A-N-N-E, and Kelly, K-E-L-L-E-Y, JeannieKellyKitchen.com, and the book Blue Eggs and Yellow Tomatoes, published by Running Press. Listeners, we encourage you to join us this afternoon, join our conversation with questions, comments. The phone number is in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, that's 333-W-I-L-L, and toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. So how do you control pests in the garden?
Well, let's see. I did learn something very valuable just this last week. In our community garden, we have these raised beds that are planted, that are just built right next to each other. And my neighbor plants perennials. She has a lot of thyme and sage and things that she keeps in her vegetable bed year-round. And I keep all the perennials out of my raised bed. I do all my herbs in these like whiskey barrel, wine barrel type containers. And what I noticed is when I planted some parsley, it was just being devoured by bugs. And I just thought, gee, this is so crazy. And it was the one on the edge, and nothing else was being eaten by bugs. Yeah. And when I went and I looked at her, I lifted up the edges of this beautiful lemon thyme plant that she had, and underneath there must have been about 200 of those little roly-poly or pill bugs that
right.
people call them. And so I think that creates a habitat for them so that they can live under there, and then they can crawl out at night and they can devour the my tender parsley. So what I did with that is I just picked all those, I just picked up all the little roly-polies and I put them in this bowl, and then I took the bowl up to the chickens, and the chickens, chickens had a field day. So that's one way to do it. What I recommend in my book is just keeping things, you know, neat and tidy. One of our horrible pests here is called an earwig.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they'll
icky looking too, yeah.
devastate things. Yeah. And the earwigs are nocturnal, and so during the day they want to hide and sleep under things. So if you can kind of make things clean and tidy and get rid of the places for them to hide, that's a good way. We did something this last summer where we put out damp newspaper at night on the ground, and then earwigs would climb under that, and then in the morning you could pick up the damp newspaper and then, you know,
scoop them up.
Yeah.
Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. Interesting show. I was very intrigued by mentioning of a freelance recipe tester and wondered how one went about getting jobs as a freelance recipe tester.
Oh, gee, how would you go about getting, most, I don't know, I know that Bon Appetit does not have freelance recipe testers anymore. This was way back in the 80s, and I think it was about, you know, their last couple of years when they had freelance recipe testers. I know people with cooking backgrounds that I think you just have to try to get your name out there. I know sometimes people go to IACP, which is the International Association of Culinary Professionals, and try to get on their website and put cards out. I mean, there are people who are always looking. I mean, anybody who's going to publish a cookbook or write a cookbook who maybe doesn't have, you know, editorial background always needs somebody to do that kind of work. So I wish I had more specific a more specific plan for you. But I think it's just trying to, you know, just, you know, contact newspapers or, you know, magazines, you know, small magazines, not big national magazines, maybe local magazines, and try to go about it that way.
All right. Thanks a lot. I look forward to seeing your book.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Is that a fun job, being a recipe tester?
Well, I don't do it anymore.
Right.
I'll go in every once in a while and do it on a, if somebody is, you know, if at Bon Appetit, for example, if somebody goes out, you know, on vacation or maternity leave, I might go in and fill in for a while. And I do always enjoy it because every time I do it, I learn something new. Primarily what I'm doing now is the recipe development, which, you know, for me, I prefer, for me, it's more creative, because I'm cooking, you know, what I want to cook, and I'm more inspired, and I get to do things, you know, the way I want to do it. So, but I also have always enjoyed the work as a recipe tester. Yeah, it's not cooking in the sense that, oh, you're just creating some wonderful dish. I mean, you have to be very meticulous. You have to weigh everything. You have to measure everything. You have to use, you know, multiple timers on everything. I mean, so it's very precise. It's very exact, and you need to have all the information, and you're taking a lot of notes. So it's not the joy of cooking in the sense that, you know, you're just creating something lovely. It's very
precision oriented. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've got to be, you know, you want it to work for the home cook.
Exactly. And so you're always, you know, looking for ways to explain things that are good visual cues for people, because you have to take into consideration that everybody's oven is going to be different, and everybody's simmer is going to be different. And, you know, one person's golden brown is going to be a lot paler than another person's
golden
brown.
I want to thank the listener for his call. Other telephone calls are invited this afternoon for our guest, Jeannie Kelly. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Well, is there an article or two that you're working on this summer that we'll look for, we could look for in either Bon Appetit or Cooking Light?
This summer, I believe it's the July or August issue, I'm not sure. I've written an article called, I think they call it Tomato Parade, and it's in Cooking Light magazine, and it features heirloom tomatoes, a roundup, a description of the different kinds of heirloom tomatoes, and recipes using them. And so that's a exciting one. And then this summer, in the August issue of Bon Appetit, I have a, I think it's, what do they call it? It's like an entertaining story. So that was really fun because it has a photograph of my goat, and it has photographs of my chickens, and it's a lovely like summer dinner menu, and it has pictures of my garden, and so that's kind of fun. It's at a home. It's like a home entertaining feature.
Yeah.
So that's the August of issue of Bon Appetit, and then the tomato story in Cooking Light.
Sometime this summer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll look for those. Speaking of entertaining, there are a number of pizza recipes in Blue Eggs and Yellow Tomatoes. And pizza is a great thing to do in the summertime on the grill with fresh ingredients. And, you know, it's just limited by your imagination. Tell us about some of the recipes in that portion of the book. Give us some ideas for what we can put on a pizza crust, whether we make the dough ourselves or buy a ready-made crust.
Right. Well, I make my own because I think it's so easy, but I've had lovely pizzas prepared for me by friends that they've used ones that they've picked up at either an Italian deli or at Trader Joe's. I love to put a pizza on my barbecue in the summertime. I think it's just a great way. You don't heat up get your house all hot. There's just a couple of things that you have to be careful of, and that's you need to be able to moderate your heat. If you're using a standard barbecue where you've, you know, lit live coals, you want to make sure that they've burned down quite a bit. Otherwise, your pizza dough will cook too quickly. So when I do it on my gas grill, I just turn that down very low. And you want to have all your ingredients ready to go. And you don't want to do a pizza that has too many toppings on it.
Mm-hmm.
You want to do one of those very simple, you know, thin crust pizzas with just like a little bit of cheese. And I always try to use something like really flavorful, like a gorgonzola or a feta or something that just, you know, has a lot of flavor in it and that will melt easily. So you always start, and you start backwards. You take your pizza dough, you roll it out and brush it with olive oil, and you put that bottom, that oil side dough on directly on the grill, and you cook it until it just turns this lovely, you know, golden brown, and then you turn it, and so then what has become, you know, the top now is where you're going to put your toppings. So you quickly sprinkle it with chopped fresh herbs, cheese, good olive oil, drizzle some chopped garlic. You can put a little cherry tomatoes, whatever. Just not too much, not too many ingredients, and then close the top. And then as the bottom cooks, the heat from the barbecue will melt the cheese and heat the ingredients on the top. And it's really good. Good.
Yeah. And what a great thing to do with kids or with company, because they can sort of say, "Well, I'd like this."
Oh, yeah, it's great. I often do, I have a gorgonzola pizza in here that's just gorgonzola, pine nuts, and fresh basil. And I love doing that when I entertain in the summertime. People will just be sitting outside in my patio, and the barbecue's there, and I have like a big wooden cutting board, and I slide the pizza off and chop it into lots of thin wedges and just pass it around. And so everybody's kind of sitting around and watching you cook pizza.
Yeah. What do you have on hand Or what would you recommend we have on hand if we are thinking maybe from time to time this summer, you know, the garden is looking good and you'd like to have some people over on the spur of the moment. What kinds of things do you have in the pantry, or what kinds of things might we want to think about having at hand so we can put something together quickly and enjoy the company?
Well, there's two trains of thought there. I always have pasta because I think pasta is a crowd pleaser, and especially if you've got a garden full of of gorgeous tomatoes that you can slice and, you know, beautiful greens that you can make a salad. I mean, that is something that, I mean, you can always fall back on having just, you know, cooking up some pasta. I love having feta cheese around because I think it keeps so well in those little vacuum-sealed packages, so that keeps. That's a great thing to keep on, to have on hand. In the book, I also have a recipe. It's just very simple, but it's that idea of if you want to have a last-minute dinner party, you know, and it's summertime and you want to put something on the grill, I have a recipe where it's just you take sausages that you buy, you know, at a good butcher, you know, where they've put a little bit of interest in making some, you know, like you could get some really good Italian sausages, or I sometimes buy these sausages that are called French garlic sausages, or there's these spicy Portuguese sausages, something like that. You throw that on the grill with citrus that's just been cut into wedges, lemons and oranges. You can even throw grapefruit on there. And green onions, and you grill all of that together, and the citrus has a wonderful way of perfuming the sausages and making them very moist. And you squeeze the citrus over; it looks beautiful. And you can accompany that with a salad and some great bread, and you know that's a dinner party that you know maybe took you know you all of a half an hour you know to prepare. So I just think that being at home with your guests, with your friends, your family, and preparing a lovely meal, it should be something that is simple and joyful and that isn't, you know, fraught yeah. with worry and, you know, too much preparation.
Yeah. There's a beautiful, one of the photos in the book, they're all lovely. The photos are gorgeous, but there's a photo that I fell upon that I thought, this is such a great idea. And here we're back to your sense of color and pairing things together. And this is hummus with jalapeno cilantro pesto. And I know that some folks might not be real wild about cilantro, but you could just go with parsley. But anyway, I was just struck by what a wonderful thing that would be. And maybe you would describe it. And we're not talking about folding in the pesto into the hummus, but laying it on top.
Yeah, I love that contrast of flavors, and I love herbs because they do provide that brightness. And if you don't like cilantro, yes, you could use just parsley, and mint would be also another delicious thing to use here. Even basil would go nicely with the hummus. I think that there's just a wonderful play of the contrast of, you know, hummus has that wonderful earthy quality to it, and then you get that bright, fresh jalapeno and cilantro pesto on the top, and this is one of my favorite dishes. I love to serve this at the kind of parties where, you know, you just want to put out a bunch of foods, and it's also, you know, I have a lot of friends who are vegetarians, so it's perfect for them. They always love this, so it's also, in the photograph, it has the olives that are marinated with the feta cheese and the mixed herbs, and boy, the combination of those two, it's, you know, anybody, even a carnivore, could make a meal out of it and be happy.
And a small dish of almonds or something, and you're ready to go. The party is underway. You can sit back and take a break while you contemplate what you want to put on the pizzas.
Yeah.
There's another thing I'd like you to talk with us about this afternoon, and you give us kind of a brief description of it, and then we'll have to wrap up. But, you know, for an idea for a dish to take, I thought that this is going to be a winner, Asian slaw with spicy peanut dressing, and this will stand up in the heat.
Oh, yeah, this is a great dish. Everybody who's ever made this has always just been like, oh, gosh, I had that coleslaw. It was so good. And it does. It has the spicy peanut dressing. And what's really great about it is people think, oh, it's Asian, you know, it needs to go with Asian food. But it doesn't. It's like, it would be great served, you know, at an Americana barbecue with, you know, grilled hamburgers. You know, it just goes with anything. And it's got this wonderful, you know, the combination of the fresh flavors of the cilantro and the little bit of spiciness, and then the peanuts, and there's a little bit of sweetness there, and then you've got the crunch from the cabbage and the red bell pepper. It's a lovely dish, and I ran into a friend the other day who made it, and she said, gee, you know, she realized that if she wanted to, she could just put in a shredded chicken breast, and there would be your protein, and that would be your entire meal. So that is a great take-along dish.
Okay. There we've got to leave it, Jeannie. Thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon.
Oh, thank you, Celeste.
Jeannie Kelly is the author of Blue Eggs and Yellow Tomatoes, Recipes from a Modern Kitchen Garden. Her name is spelled Jeannie with two N's and an E, and Kelly is spelled K-E-L-L-E-Y. You'll find her on the web at www.jeanniekellykitchen.com. Blue Eggs and Yellow Tomatoes is published by Running Press.